Hello, this is KPTZ Port Townsend, 91.9 FM on your radio dial. I'm Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. Have you ever wondered who the people are that you see every day around town? The cashier at First Federal or Wells Fargo, the firefighters or police officers, the couple in the Subaru stopping to take pictures of the mama deer and her tiny spotted twin fawns. This show, Our Town, profiles some of the fascinating people who live and work in Port Townsend. We talk with people who make up this eclectic mix in Port Townsend. We talk about their lives, their dreams, and how they ended up on the western edge of the USA. We'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and teenage beauty queens. We'll find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in Port Townsend. Listening to Our Town is a way to meet some of Port Townsend's authentic and even eclectic people. Your neighbors, your friends, and particularly the people you don't know yet, but you'd like to meet them. Today we're going to be talking with Nathan Barnett, a man who wears many hats. Nathan and his wife, Cindy Madsen, own and run the Old Consulate Inn, you know, the romantic one with the turrets near the courthouse. But innkeeper is only one of Nathan's jobs. He runs the Steampunk Festival, which, by the way, is happening the weekend of May 29th, the Victorian Festival, the Victorian Yuletide Festival, and, oh yes, he also works for Microsoft. Welcome to Our Town, Nathan.
Thank you, Marianne. Delighted to be here.
Are you a native of Port Townsend, or how did you end up here?
I did not. We've been here for just coming up on 4 years now. And it was a fortuitous that we ended up here in that we bought and now operate the old consulate. But before that, we'd been coming up for years. Literally, I think 15, 20 years, we'd been those people who came up for a weekend and always said, oh, it'd be great to live here. So that happened.
And in those years when you came up, did you ever actually stay at the old consulate?
We didn't. We stayed at a lot of other bed and breakfasts. Huh. The James House when it was a B&B and many other accommodations in town, but hadn't stayed in the old consulate. Cindy had, apparently, but that was before my time.
In part of your life, you work for Microsoft. Was that your goal always to be a techie?
Certainly not. I've got a master's in literature, and I spent a fair number of years teaching freshman lit. The last school I taught at was Seattle Central. I still love teaching, and I still find ways to make that a part of my life.
Okay.
But the tech was a fortuitous change that allowed me to explore some other possibilities. I bought my first computer right after getting my first technical writing job, so I was a writer first and a tech second.
Interesting. So you had to learn quickly.
Everything quickly. I think everyone in tech is always learning quickly, drinking from the fire hose.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, what do you actually do for Microsoft?
I'm a technical writer.
Okay.
So
it does merge with your writing.
Definitely, definitely. Now, I'm a writer, still a writer first, but I write for a very techie corner of Microsoft that deals with enterprise software. So if you are concerned about your computer, you're not my audience. If you're worried about 10,000 computers, then you're my audience.
I see.
An IT professional.
Okay. And does this job allow you to work from home a lot?
I work 3 days from Port Townsend, which is fantastic.
That's great.
It's great. So I just walk into my office, any place with an internet connection, I can do my job.
Wow, that's great. It's amazing that so many people can do that.
Yeah.
And it's great for a town like ours, which is a little bit far away from other things.
It is. It's a great place to live and enjoy that other world.
Okay.
So it's been great.
So you've owned the old consulate for 4 years?
4 years now, yeah.
Okay. And can you tell me the story? Was it really a consulate?
The old consulate was the home of a vice consulate for Germany for about 4 years. It was really never German soil, never really a consulate in that, oh, this is an official building and, you know, we have German National Guard sitting
in
front.
And so what year roughly we're talking about?
1907 to 1911, I think. And there was a boarder living there in the house, and he was asked by the German consulate, which was here in Port Townsend. We had all of the consulates from those early days when this was the shipping center for the Salish Sea. That fellow who was a German was asked to serve as a vice consulate. the German's consulate was moving down to Olympia, I believe.
So, I see. Well, so it was a private residence, and he was a boarder there, but people just started calling it that, I guess.
Right. So, well, it was, I mean, the Germans considered it to be a vice consulate to the degree that we had an honorary consulate from, I believe, Seattle now, turn up and ask if she could take a tour because she wanted to see this location that had once been the consulate for Germany.
Interesting.
So they still very much consider it to have been a consulate. We have official stationery from 1910 with the letterhead, vice consulate.
Well, it's been a B&B for a number of years now. And how would you say the place has changed since you and Cindy took over?
Good question. We're both very interested in history. Cindy's looking to make it as authentic a Victorian experience as possible, plus or minus flush toilets, Wi-Fi, phones, comfortable beds. So what we wanted to do was a feel that looked, that felt more authentic. What I would think of as Victoriana. So we don't have cute things or the things that I think people sometimes, you think lots of doilies and lots of little curios and things that collect dust in all the corners. We're comfortable, but if my Victorian home was going to be in Port Townsend, it wouldn't have been, you know, high society. And it's kind of that comfortable mix between 19th century aesthetics and 21st century technology.
So you do have things like flush toilets and Wi-Fi.
We're big fans.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, and a great six burner stove that can make breakfast for 16.
How many rooms are in it?
We have eight rooms. All different. People say, well, I just want a room. It's like, oh, there isn't just a room.
You have a website, I presume.
We do.
What is it?
That's oldconsulate.com.
So you and your wife bought the old consulate in 4 years ago. How has the place changed since you took over?
Well, we have changed a fair bit. There was the great teddy bear purge. Each room had a teddy bear in it when we got the inn. And much as I appreciate teddy bears, all the teddy bears went. There are fewer doilies and a lot more tech. So Wi-Fi available pretty much anywhere in the house, not just for the guests. Personally, I want to be able to be connected anywhere in the house.
Right. Well, I think you need to be, right?
I do.
So what happened to the teddy bears? Were they marched down the plank?
No. They all found good homes. They went to Goodwill.
Oh, this is good.
We took good care of them. We still have one. Okay. Every now and then, it turns up in unexpected places, and Cindy hears a blood-curdling scream. No!
But the old consulate inn does have modern conveniences as well as the Victorian feel. Flush toilets and everything.
Everything. Absolutely. Yeah. No, we're very much about comfort. So, individual heat in all the rooms, private showers. You can rest assured, in the 19th century, that house had one bathroom, no running water, of course. The bathroom was just a bath.
Yes, I would think so. But if anyone wants to stay there, they could obviously look at your website. What is it?
The old website's oldconsulate.com.
Well, that's pretty easy.
Yeah. And we have a lot of folk who, guests staying from out of town, but visiting here. Maybe you don't have two extra guest rooms. Well, we get that frequently.
Yeah.
Happy to do that.
You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. I'm Marianne McNellis, and I'm the host of this show, which is called Our Town. My guest today is Nathan Barnett, who owns the Old Consulate Inn and is also the mastermind behind several quirky Port Townsend events. One of them's coming up the last weekend in May, the Steampunk Festival, also called the Brass Screw Confederacy. I bet that some of our listeners are not all that familiar with the term steampunk, so here's a bit of background. Steampunk is a subgenre of science fiction and sometimes fantasy. It also incorporates fashion and lifestyle movements. It incorporates technology and design inspired by 19th century industrial steam-powered machinery. Its literary heritage is associated with the cyberpunk genre, but steampunk literature is often set in an alternative history of the 19th century, the British Victorian era, or even the American Wild West. It's a future where steam power has become mainstream, a fantasy world that employs steam power Some people would describe it as neo-Victorian. It features retro-futuristic inventions that people of the 19th century might have envisioned. It's rooted in the era's perspective on fashion, culture, architecture, style, and art. Think of the fantasy inventions of Jules Verne or H.G. Wells. It's an alternative history featuring things like lighter-than-air airships, analog computers, and the like. As you can tell, it's a perfect fit for Port Townsend, a Victorian town just crawling with artistic history, culture, and technical aficionados. There are dozens, if not hundreds, of steampunk festivals around the globe. It's not a joke. A metro station in Paris was redesigned in 1994 to honor the works of Jules Verne. The station is reminiscent of a submarine, sheathed in brass, with giant cogs in the ceiling and portholes looking out to fanciful scenes. The Museum of the History of Science in Oxford, England, had a steampunk exhibition that drew over 80,000 visitors. In New Zealand, there's a Liberatory steampunk art gallery. Papier-mâché was used to create a huge subterranean cave filled with industrial equipment from yesteryear, including ray guns, gas masks, goggles. It's a huge tourist attraction for the town of Amaru. Nathan, can you tell us about Port Townsend's own steampunk movement?
Absolutely. We've been going strong now since, well, we really got going in 2012, and it's been growing amazingly. This year is looking fantastic. But it got started with a little help from the Chamber of Commerce's Young Professionals Network. A bunch of folk were sitting around saying, well, what do we need to do to make this a great place, especially for people in their 20s and 30s, get a reason to stay in Port Townsend, savor the culture. And yes, we need more jobs and we need affordable housing. We also need cool things to do. And so a bunch of us said, okay, steampunk's kind of hitting its peak right now, and this is a perfect place for a steampunk festival. It'll be great for accommodations and businesses, but also a great party for people to go and dance. It's just a really good time.
Well, it's true that some of our events sort of skew towards the retirement age group. So your steampunk, I assume, even children and retirees can attend. But it seems to me last year when I was wandering around the streets during it, there were a lot of, 20, 30-somethings in town.
Indeed, there were. I think we nailed it. Our demographic, definitely, we have lots of kids, and we have a couple of school groups coming this year, too.
Cool.
Their literature professors or teachers in both cases are focusing on steampunk literature.
Oh,
in school.
Cool. Are the kids going to get to dress up?
Definitely.
Oh, that's
definitely
wonderful.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Well, tell me, what are some of the events during the steampunk festival?
My current favorite, I think, is probably we've got a tactical croquet tournament this year. So that looks a lot like if you took miniature golf, but you played it with croquet mallets and balls, and then had the field liberally strewn with artists, strange artistic creations, just kind of if Alice in Wonderland went terribly awry and playful. So we have a Red Queen who will be doubtlessly shouting, "Off with their heads!" We even have a competition for people to make their own croquet mallets and then modify them, because steampunks love to reinvent things, decorate.
Physically, where is the croquet tournament?
Memorial Stadium, right. Wow. In the middle of town.
Wow, so, that's great.
Yeah, perfect.
And how many people can participate?
I'm hoping for thousands. But realistically, you go through in teams of four. Mm-hmm. After your little tee off, you have to have a tee off, which
right.
is when you go and you get your little cup of tea.
Yeah, so all right, I can see that.
So you have a tee off, and then groups of four go through can play it.
No, is this a tournament in which there are actually trophies or ribbons or something like that?
We've kept score in the past. We'll see if we keep score this year. I kind of like it just as this really fun experience. There will be a competition for the best decorated mallet this year, however.
The best decorated mallet. Are you going to set up little tables with artistic supplies to help out, or are you supposed to decorate your mallet at home?
This would be a bring-your-own, finely decorated mallet. From what we saw last year, when there wasn't a tournament, or a competition. People just arrived with their beautiful steampunk mallets. But these were the works of hours and days.
Excellent.
There were some wonderful, wonderful examples of steampunk art on the mallet.
That's fabulous. And so what are some of the other events?
The crown jewel, the centerpiece, the keystone is the Hootenanny, which happens Saturday night. And that's a big party. That's we have three bands coming in. We've got the Marquis de Vaudeville coming in from Austin, Texas. And then two regional steampunk bands, Nathaniel Johnstone and Jody Ellen, are both just fantastic regional bands. Plus a burlesque show, an absinthe room, movies, all kinds of great, crazy things. All of them extremely steampunk. But one of the special things about steampunk is you just go to see other people. The costumes and the creations are so extraordinary that it's a living museum. You immerse yourself into this wonderful, weird world and then get to play, and then it evaporates.
So are there any rules for dressing, or is it totally wide open?
I think there are statutes that set certain requirements on what one should or at least should not wear. In general, anything goes. Okay. One of the beautiful things about steampunk is that there are very few rules. Think about 19th century. Don't stay in the 19th century.
Yeah, well, the 19th century did have a lot of rules. So this is a reinterpretation of a freer 19th century?
Absolutely. One of the standard jokes is that, especially for women's clothing, you suddenly, all you have is the underwear. You have the corset and these wonderful crinoline skirts and so forth, which of course would have been the underdressing of a proper 19th century woman.
Yeah, well, I was on the street last year during the steampunk festival, and I did see a lot of corsets and fabulous attire. Can you describe a couple of the outfits, aside from the corsets, that some people had last year?
Certainly. So one of my favorites, 19th century, men were still sometimes wearing their short pants. You know, you had kind of a knickers stocks experience.
Teddy Roosevelt.
Exactly. Right into the 20th century, really. So that's like a not uncommon look, but a lot of steampunk is also, so you have the gentleman with the short pants and, you know, a smart coat, and then, you know, a cleverly constructed ray gun. And of course, there are often goggles to protect one's eyes from the steam and the grime. But a lot of steampunk is about that punk aspect. So this is sometimes more towards that dystopian, you know, things have grown. We've grown a steam technology, and then things have gone somewhat awry. Part of it is a response to the industrialization, and it's like how this might be a darker world. So you have the punk aspect, where it's like working folk, great, you know, the machinist with great big wrenches and, you know, hard hitting working staff. These are some of the common motifs. They're definitely, you know, it's a little, instead of being very posh in your Victorian attire, this is a little grimy. It's got a little edge to it. You know, so you have not just the neo-Victorian aristocracy, but also some hard-working airship
class
mechanic and the adventurer who's been through a few scraps before he turned up here.
Yeah, I saw one guy who seemed to be outfitted for a safari.
We appreciate our adventurers.
Yes.
Definitely. There are a bunch of steampunk archetypes, if you will, and, you know, the adventurer is definitely one of the common characters.
Okay. Now, I know there's something called the Victorian Manly Arts. What's that?
Oh, thank you. That's actually, it's a lecture that, there are a whole series of lectures that we refer to as chautauquas after the 19th century lecture circuit that went around the country. The steampunk chautauqua will be featuring that Manly Arts exhibit by yours truly. We'll be looking at how men fought, both the art of the duel and what warfare looked like in the 19th century, but also a little bit of how it might have looked in a steampunk context. So my favorite thing is I bring in, usually it's, you know, anywhere from 20 to 50 people. I distribute cutlasses to them, and I tell them that in just 25 minutes, the Hun or zombies or something is going to come over that hill.
Bad stuff.
Bad things. And we need to be ready to defend ourselves. And so I give in 20 minutes my best how to defend yourself and survive an attack with a cutlass.
So interesting.
It's 20 minutes crack course in Victorian martial arts.
Wait a minute. I'm not completely clear what a cutlass is. Describe it to me, please.
Short sword. It's got a nice little basket, defends the hand, and then, it's about 29 or 30 inches of steel.
Okay.
Finely honed. Of course, mine are not sharp. you run out of students really quickly if you use sharp weapons.
Yeah, I think so.
But this is something I do. I teach every week. I teach a fencing course here in Port Townsend.
Interesting.
So this is an opportunity to share that a little more broadly.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, do you use the cutlass in the fencing course or
yes.
do you use something else?
Nope.
No?
It's a cutlass. And a good big, it's a 2.5-3 pound steel cutlass.
How long does it take to learn how to fence?
Well, with an expert teacher such as myself, about 25 minutes.
Yeah.
I have students who have been working with me for years.
Yeah, it's, I think it.
Yeah. It develops like any other physical art, like dance. It's complex. There's a lot of subtlety. But you can get out and have a lot of fun in the first couple classes.
Okay. Now, Sherlock Holmes is a big theme, but does he fit into steampunk?
Yes. And turns up, there are a fair number of Sherlockian lectures and even I think a few things in our vendor hall that deal with Sherlock Holmes. Arthur Conan Doyle, fantastic, fun writer, comes up with this wonderful, you always have this hint of what else might be going on in the background. And that's kind of the place where steampunk jumps to, but Doyle gives us this wonderful world with, the smoky, gritty underbelly of 19th century London.
Right. And who is Moriarty anyhow?
Exactly. And what horrifying, catastrophic device might he come up with next?
In one interpretation, Moriarty is a female.
We don't disapprove of this. I think the popularity of that interpretation is that we can all imagine that being the case.
Yes.
Far too clever to be a man.
A devious mind.
Indeed.
Indeed. Okay, so if people wanted to find out more about Port Townsend Steampunk Festival, how would they?
Well, conveniently, there is a website at www.brass-screw.org. So it's brass-screw.
Okay, and I don't quite get the connection, brass screw and steampunk.
Well, the event is called the Brass Screw Confederacy.
Okay.
And there is a story that right around 1889, a band of intrepid adventurers contrived a device to take them off into the, I don't know what. And suddenly this marvelous brass screw that allowed them to cut through time and space to another world. We didn't really ever spell that out very well. There's a beautiful big brass screw that is at the centerpiece of every brass screw event.
Okay.
And that big brass propeller, if you will, is kind of our, that's the object that the brass screw is designed around.
Okay. And what is the group behind this festival?
Interesting. Olympic Peninsula Steam is a nonprofit that we formed to help keep the Victorian Festival going, which has been going, it's in its 20th year. Next year will be the 20th anniversary of the Victorian Festival, which is kind of a cornerstone of Port Townsend. So we took that over, and the brass screw, and then we're doing a Christmas event as well. So it's a nonprofit that is really dedicated to an appreciation of history with an opportunity for play and fun.
Okay. So the Victorian Festival is maybe just another facet, a different way to enjoy the heritage of Port Townsend?
Definitely. It's a let's stop and look at the history. And we really do focus on looking more at Port Townsend's history than what was the 19th century. People might be wearing bowlers, but we're also talking about what were the maritime trades here and what was going on in our history. Downtown was really rough. It wasn't a genteel society. They might have had tea, but not much.
Yeah, I've been in the little jail cells under the museum downtown, and it doesn't look real comfy there.
No. I think a lot of life out here wasn't real comfy. The streets weren't all paved, and there were a lot of horses.
Yeah. So what month is the Victorian Festival in?
That's in March.
That's in March. And the Steampunk Festival is last weekend in May this year.
We're trying to, we are looking to always have it be on the weekend after Memorial Day.
Ah, so. Okay. That makes sense. And do you see the two events as competing or complementary?
Our participants and guests definitely see them as complementary. We have a lot of people who turn up for both. You get your history at one, you get your playtime at the other.
Okay. Well, Nathan, we're almost out of time right now. I guess I want to say you've got an incredibly busy life with working for Microsoft, running the Old Council and Inn, and masterminding these festivals. What do you do in your so-called off time?
I think probably the fencing and music. So I play lute. I do a lot of lute and hurdy-gurdy when I can. This last 3 or 4 months with the Victorian Festival and the Brass Screw, there hasn't been any concern for that free time. But I definitely love playing music. I like a good pint.
Yes. The lute, that's an interesting instrument. How long have you been playing it?
About 12 years now, I think.
Wow. So. And why did you pick it?
I always had a fascination with history, and the place that stuck first was with the Renaissance. So we did a lot of Renaissance music. I had a Renaissance vocal ensemble that I led for years. Huh. Fencing, dance. We did all these wonderful Renaissance things. Now we're doing those for the Victorian era.
Great. Okay, well, we're basically out of time. You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ. I'm Marianne McNellis. My guest this week is Nathan Barnett, owner of the Old Council and Inn, director of the Steampunk Festival, and a Microsoft employee. If you missed part of the show or you want to listen to it again, go to our website, kptz.org. You can listen to the podcast for the next several weeks. Stay tuned to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM for more dynamic, eclectic, local programming.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Marianne McNellis and engineered by Sonny Flores.